They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit, there'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 239. Stop hitting yourself. I'm Matt, alongside Ant and Ash and Ryan and Tom and Steve. How you doing, boys?
Is there someone missing? Why can't I see, like, just a shadow? Like, there should be an extra person.
It's because I have an AI bot recording and transcribing the show.
Oh.
But it could take your job.
2023. I thought we were in like a horror film, like that film where they all get trapped in that webcam and it starts killing them.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like The Ring, but like updated.
Unfriended, that's what it was. I thought we were stuck in that.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're on about. Let's get on topic. This is the Lions.
Let's get onto us losing against the Bears. Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. I do really feel like Nelson from The Simpsons is just, well, the NFC North actually versus the Lions recently. But anyway, we'll get onto that in a second. Lions at Bears, we're going to be breaking that down now because we have nothing better to do with our lives. Yeah.
We're contractually obliged.
The sad part is that we're really not.
We're just here. We're just here so we don't get fined.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to get through some preamble. We got a little bit of news coming up from Dan Campbell press conference, which happened about 15 minutes ago. And then we're going to get into the game. We've got our Discord channel, which is, of course, a great place to be all the way through the week. Even in a bad week, it's still a great place to be. Link is in the chat right now. Come and join us. It's a supportive community where you can vent your frustration. College Football Podcast. And what's going on this week?
Bowl prediction week, so bowl season is upon us, so me and Ryan are going to be doing our predictions for that, and then going through the end of season awards as well, so yeah, it's going to be good.
Please do join the boys, of course, with the draft just 4.5 months away. You've got to start learning about the prospects, because of course, we'll be there alongside the rest of you. Come and have some beers with us, and we'll cheer the Bears making mistakes at 1-5 in the NFL draft. Please do like the show, sub to the podcast, all that good stuff, and add Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook group, Herman Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. We're Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized. There's a tip jar down below in the YouTube description if you're enjoying the show and you want to show some love that way. Much appreciated. And there's a feedback form down there too if you've got some... why can't I speak tonight? If you've got suggestions for content or constructive criticism, like replace the host, for example, then you can do that there. Thanks for that, Steve. and we have got our merch store live as well. That's in the chat at the moment. If you want a Christmas gift for someone, if you haven't bought anything yet and you're like, oh, it's only 2 weeks till Christmas, you know what to do. It's a great way to help the show out and get something back. Right, news. Dan Campbell reveals that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and James Houston are expected to return in late December or early January at the earliest. Ragnow is TBD for Saturday. Bruce Irvin ankle injury is what kept him out this week, as opposed to it being any sort of tactical thing. He says that the Jerry and Vildor rotation is going to continue. He liked what he saw from Vildor yesterday. He said he's got no problem with yesterday's offensive game plan and play calling, just execution was lacking. And when talking about expanding JMO's role, he gave a generic answer about getting all the best players involved, but says he has earned more opportunities. A lot of that refers to the game, and we'll get into that. But injuries, boys, it's affected us obviously with Ragnow not being in, and CJGJ and Houston are two big players that we could get back. Ryan, does it feel like it could turn our fortunes around if we can get these guys back, if we make the playoffs and CJGJ and Houston are back in? Does it make a big difference, you think? And I mean, Ragnow too, right?
I'll see it when I believe it. I don't believe they're coming back. I've heard this multiple times. I don't believe what the players say. I don't even believe, like, say that Dan's that confident until the medics, like, they literally physically signed off to return the windows opened. And also, I don't think Charles Gardner-Johnson will make a huge difference. If I'm perfectly honest, I don't think he made a big difference right the season. People are, like, praising him, like, getting him back, like, he's this almighty God and he will solve all of our problems. I don't like him as a person, as a player. He's good, but for me, just don't fix it. Houston, on the other hand, God, we could really do him back. Because honestly, everything opposite Hutch has been a waste of space. Like, we are just not, we've got no one capable of setting the edge on that other side. Like I say, Bruce. Well, I'm not surprised he's hurt already. Like, the guy's the tin man. And even if he wasn't hurt, you still don't play him. He's got no lateral movement whatsoever. Justin Fields would have absolutely decleated him just with a simple juke. So even if he was healthy, I still wouldn't have played him anyway because he would have been completely nullified. Ragnow, if Ragnow can't go on Saturday, I'm chalking that up as an L. Because I know they're not doing disastrous things, but we can't run the hot ball behind our secret from Casarsdale. We've proved now in multiple games it don't work behind him. And Graham, it's his second best position. He's doing the best he can, but yeah, so injuries right now, they're killing us. And like you say, I would love to get James back, but I just don't want to be too late by the time we do get him back, like say, because these next four games, like say, there's no gimme yet that there'll be a fifth game. So it's all right saying, like, early January, will we have football to play in early January? That remains to be seen. So, and player calling, of course, Dan's going to say that. We all saw different. Like you say, hey, some of the player calling I thought were terrible. I thought we're out coaching. I hate some of the decisions. Like you say, running on third and a mile, running the ball. You say, wide open reads getting missed. It was a calamity. But yeah, I'm not surprised Dan is just keeping stum. Like I say, he's not going to go on a massive run. He ain't going to throw anyone under the bus either, because right now that is probably the last thing we need.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, CJ is the better player. One thing that's been a little frustrating, I think, is we've all watched the defense the last 4-6 weeks. There doesn't seem to be a lot of frustration on the field, and I don't mean people like losing their minds, just it's a little bit defeatist at times, and I don't think you'll see that with CJ back on the field. He'll be the guy who's trying to rile everyone up in a good way, so I think that'd be appreciated. What I would say, though, is if you're missing 12, 16 weeks, whatever it would be, trying to expect someone in that role to come back and make significant impact just feels like a really hard ask with a lot of rust to shake off. Whereas Houston, obviously not as proven as a player, but not only is bringing a skill set we don't currently have on the roster, but also is in a much more limited role. He'd just be told to pin his ears back, bend the corner, and go get pressure on the quarterback. So actually, I feel like that's an easier thing to come back to if you've had that much time off, obviously assuming he's fully healthy. Similar to Rye, let's see when they come back. I really don't think we should expect any kind of impact from them. If they do provide an impact, brilliant. But I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we were saying James Houston completely changes this defense off a four months without playing, sadly.
Steve, do you agree?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you want to play football in January, you're going to have injuries. Pretty much every NFL team has got its fair share of injuries. There's a few teams around the league that are doing, you know, that are above 500 that are pretty ravaged by injuries, and it's just something we need to deal with. But I think what it has done is it's just really shown our lack of depth at key positions.
And is that how you see it too?
Yeah, we're missing CJ something chronically. We have done all season. There is not one iota of, you know, leadership in that secondary. There's no organization. There's lots of stupid mistakes been made, lots of busted coverages. I would wheel him out right now with whatever injury he's got over pretty much any of our secondary players at all. I think he's that important to this team. And it doesn't help. You know, we're young. We're missing him. We're missing Mosley. We're missing Aleem. We can't afford to lose that kind of leadership. And that's what happens. You have a lot of young guys who are missing that leadership, especially he is one of the only players on this team who's ever been to a Super Bowl. Like, we don't have that sort of experience in our ranks. And right now we are pushing for the playoffs where a lot of these players have never been. And you need that sort of veteran leadership on the field that's critical to a team like this. So I hope he's back soon. He said the 20th on his... I hope that they relent and let him on and they get him back because we need him badly. And we need Houston back really badly as well. So if we can hold on to the playoffs and get these guys back, hopefully give them a game or two, ease them back in, get their loads up, then we should be in really good stead. And I hope they are back because, yeah, they're very critical to this team.
Ash, anything to add?
Yeah, the one thing I would add, CJGJ, what does he bring to this back end other than leadership? Turnovers. We're talking about a guy who led the league in interceptions last year. What has this defense outside of a couple of good guys, games from Jerry and two good games from Kirby, what we've lacked on the back end? Interceptions. Is bringing someone back who has that and has done that for the past few years in the league, always been up there this year. Last year, obviously, led the league in interceptions. Thought he could have got the big contract. He didn't. Came to us to sort of build up here. And then obviously tears his pec in week one. Been out since. I think he's actually got the easier road back because that injury is a lot easier to recover from than what Houston had to him later as well, because that was obviously the week later. Because if you listen to, I know it's probably another podcast, but Detroit Lions podcast ones with the docs that have got in, Houston, if he's back, will only be allowed to play on the right-hand side because of the way his game is with the sort of ankle protection and all that he has, because of the way his leg is. He will only be able to do that from the right-hand side because he's having no muscle on the left-hand side of his ankle because of what's happened with his leg. So you're really limiting his game. So yeah, he might be able to bring us a bit from that right-hand side, but when teams see him out there on the right-hand side on passing downs, they'll be able to game plan for him. Oh, CJGJ, he's a bit further back and he's got an easier injury to recover from. So for me, he'll probably have the better impact in terms of on-field production as well as helping with the leadership and communication on the back end that we've missed sorely, especially this week where we, as we'll come on to in a bit, we sat our defensive secondary leader for some reason.
Right,
quick question.
Sorry.
Who here would re-sign Gardner Johnson if he doesn't come back this season for injury? Like, say, who would sign him on a multi-year deal if you could? Would you all re-sign him? Would you just let him walk?
I'd sign him because there's nobody else in that secondary who does what he does. I don't care if he's been injured. His price tag's going to go down. I'm going to keep him here because you are likely going to draft another corner this year pretty high. So you are going to have an even younger secondary than you have now. And veteran presences like him don't just come on the open market all the time and they don't offer what he does. And we're still training Branch, you know, so having him here helps Branch's development and it gives us a bona fide leader in secondary. They just don't come onto the free agency market very often. And if they do, you've got to pay through the nose for them. So I would take advantage and say, look, we've stuck by you this year. We'll give you the same money again, maybe over a couple of years, whatever, give you a chance to get a better deal, give you some big incentives and go with that. But I am not letting him walk out the building with what we've got left here. Not a chance.
Assuming market value deal, yeah, I'm returning him. I don't think it's a repeatable injury particularly. And I mean, it's as much about our depth as it is about him as a player. Like, Trace has been benched. He's, for me, a surefire cut candidate in the offseason. We get too much back for him for a backup player. So now you're hoping... In fact, is Melifonwu on his last year as well? So...
Entering his last year of his rookie deal next season. Yeah,
okay, career. So we got 4 more years. Okay, so that's fine. So Melifonwu is the backup. CJGJ is the starter along with Kirby, who's had a bad season. Like, you need two or three guys in that room. So yeah, if you've got the option, I take it.
Right, from your side, because I'm getting the impression maybe you don't see it that way, would you bring him back on the same kind of one-year deal? Was it 8 mil? I can't remember, 8 or 10, something like that. Would you bring him back 1 year on that short term?
Like I said, I won't tie myself to him any longer. I think I'll give him 1 year, another prove-it deal. I probably wouldn't even give him 8 million. I'd probably haggle and say, if you want to stay here, you get like 4 or 5, I'm honest. But I agree. Actually, I think Tracy's been my biggest disappointment of the year. He's gone missing. There's no leadership. He's gone into hiding. And I see why he was benched. Like I say, and it pains me to say that. I know he's had an injury, but yeah, he's not rallying him up, is he? And he's the, what is he, 29? He's like the old father time back there. And I expect more from him. So yeah, I won't be surprised if he gets sat on Saturday. If he don't start, to be honest.
All right, let's do this. Lions 13, Bears 28. Lions points all coming in the second quarter. So you talk about turd quarter, but unfortunately it was turd first quarter and turd fourth quarter as well. Goff, 20 of 35, 161, a touchdown, two picks, both picks coming in garbage time of either half. On the ground, Jahmyr Gibbs led the team, 11 carries for 66 yards and a touchdown. David Montgomery, 10 carries for 66 yards. Receiving-wise, led by Josh Reynolds, 3 of 4 for 44 and a touchdown. Sam Laporta, 2 of 6 for 23. Amon-Ra, 3 of 9 for 21. It was a bad day receiving the ball for some key players for the Lions. On offense for the Bears, Justin Fields, 19 of 33 for 223 and a touchdown. Also 12 for 58 and a touchdown on the ground. Donta Foreman had 11 for 50. And then DJ Moore, 6 of 10 for 68 and a touchdown in the air, but also 3 for 20 and a touchdown on the ground. Otherwise led in the air by Cole Kmet, 5 of 7 for 66 yards. They did recover a fumble of ours. Botched snap was recovered by TJ Edwards, and they had a pick by Jalen Johnson and Tremaine Edmonds as well. Lions led on defense by Jack Campbell with 10 and Alex Anzalone with 9 tackles. There were 3 sacks. One by Jalen Rusmabin, one by Aiden Hutchinson, one by John Kaminsky, and 2 other tackles for a loss, one by Benito Jones, and one by Kendall Vildor. Chicago had Jaquan Brisker with 17 tackles in the game, which is just ridiculous. They had 4 sacks, 1 for Montez Sweat, 1 for Yannick Ngakoue, 1 for Justin Jones, and then Jones and Gervin Dexter shared one between them. Other tackles for a loss, there was 1 by Tremaine Edmonds, 1 by TJ Edwards, 1 by Jack Sanborn. Otherwise, we were talking about it before the show started, but Riley Patterson missed an extra point, and the Lions blocked a Cairo Santos extra point as well. Boys, high-level takes here before we go through the drive summaries and going through the game as it happened, but What are your big takeaways from this game? I'll go in the reverse order from how I just went. So Ash, I'll come to you first. How are you feeling the day after now that the Lions falls are 9-4, and are we 2-2 in division now?
I think so, but yeah, because we split with the Bears and the Packers haven't even played the Vikings yet. So yeah, looking forward to that, especially after their iconic win last night. Such an offensive performance. But anyway, the thing I'm most upset about, and it's petty in that, the fact that we came so damn close to my hot take of us keeping Justin Fields under 50 or less yards actually nearly came bloody true. We were so fucking close. And so close to glory. Didn't happen. But that just shows we managed for the most part to keep Fields in the pocket, not really let him scramble except for some key third downs we get to. And yet, we still lost. The thing that we thought would hurt us the most was actually just a little tiny fawn and pinprick, and it was actually us just going around just mad, as the title says, just hitting ourselves in the face and causing ourselves to bleed, that lost us the game. So as we come onto it, there were some good bits. For the most part, there was mediocre to bad.
And how do you feel the day after?
It was not a nice experience yesterday at all. It's kind of like the first game between us, but we didn't like even have the ability to manage a comeback this time. But I kind of understand, in a way, now that I've thought about it a bit more. We're 9-4 in the year, but what we are, quintessentially at the end of the day, is a very young football team who was built through the draft. We've got a lot of young guys. And then, as I said, we're missing a lot of our experienced vets, which you try and complement out to make a good team. But we're at that point in the year now where you're under serious pressure to deliver, because you are 2 games away from an NFC North title. You are 3 games away from the playoffs. it is a situation that this team simply has not been in before. Like the last 2 years, you've not really been under that pressure because you've been coming from behind. Now you're in front and you're expected to go out and do big things. And with a team like ours, it's pressure. It's a mental barrier that you've got to overcome. And I think we've seen over the last few weeks, it's been getting to them a little bit. Now they've been recovering, but yesterday was a case of like everybody looked bad. Offense, defense, special teams, hell, even Amon-Ra, who's been our most consistent player for years, he looked like a rabbit in the headlights. And that's just, you just don't see that from him. But again, you've got to take into consideration where we're at as a team. This is going to happen. This is what happens when you build young. It's what happens when you build through the draft. It's a big obstacle to overcome getting to really winning, getting to the postseason. And I feel like that's where we're at the minute. This team is just struggling to adapt to the pressure and it's making mistakes. Like a lot of the mistakes yesterday, botched snaps, drops, stuff like that. They're pressure mistakes. They are mistakes made because they're feeling the pressure and they're not used to it. It's a process. And I'm not too fussed. At the end of the day, we are 9-4. We're one of five teams in the NFL who have 9+ wins. It is not easy to win games of football. Despite us not playing well the last month, despite us having our issues, we're still 2 games clear at the top of the division. Why? Because we played some bloody good football for a very long time and put ourselves in a position where we could allow this, where we could absorb a bad period of time like this. So I'm not as worried. I just think this is the next growth of the team. Year one, you saw them struggle to 0-10-1 because we were just a bad football team. And you saw them overcome that towards the end of the season. The start of last year, they went 1-6 and you start to question them again. Are they the team we think they're going to be? And yeah, they are. Just took 1 win, took a little bit of a spark and they took that next step forward. And they took another step forward this year with the great start we had. And now this is just the next obstacle to overcome. So I can understand games like this, given the situation that they're in. I don't like it. Like, I hate losing to the Bears. I hate losing like that to the Bears. I hate every damn thing about it. But I understand this is a team that's on the final precipice of becoming good. And you're going to take games like that in that process. It's what you get for building young. And the fans who have demanded we build through the draft, who have demanded we start again and do it this way, this, unfortunately, is one of the things you've got to deal with. Just keep with them. Stick with them. They always prove us right. I'm not as worried after yesterday. I think they'll come back big against the Broncos because I think now that'll be... Yesterday was a free shot. We're still in charge of our destiny. We've still got a couple of opportunities here, and I think they'll adapt to it. So I'm not as bothered 24 hours on.
How about you, Steve? How does it feel a day after?
I'm more bothered 24 hours on because I've had, you know, for the last 12 hours on social media, I've had people tell me that I'm a bad fan because I'm criticising the team and people hiding behind their record. Oh, but we're 9-3, we're 9-4. Well, we're a bad team at the moment and we've been a bad team since Thanksgiving. If you look back, you know, that 9-4 record is a castle built on sand because we've not really played many good teams this year. The best team we played this year is the Baltimore Ravens and they spanked us. Played the Chiefs, who are okay, you know, a good team but flawed, and we beat them. And that was a brilliant start to the season. But we've played a lot of really, really average teams and we've squeaked by a lot of them. And then we've gone into a game against the Bears, who are our divisional rivals. You know, we've already, if people are saying, oh, but, you know, we get these games, you know, these games are just like a wake-up call. We've already had a fucking wake-up call. It was on Thanksgiving against a very average Green Bay Packers team who we made to look like peak Favre era of Green Bay Packers. And they spanked us, and the Bears spanked us yesterday. And again, like people saying, oh, you know, screwed by the refs. We didn't lose because of the refs. We lost because we played bad football on both sides of the ball. And then I look at the media and what the media are saying, and there's just some unbelievable stuff. I'm on the Pride of Detroit website now. 3 winners, four losers from the loss to the Bears. Winner, Aiden Hutchinson. I'm speechless. Hutchinson finished the game with two tackles, a pass deflection, a tackle for loss, and a sack. With that sack, he sets a record in franchise history. I mean, Hutchinson is probably my favourite player. But he had two horrific moments, which aren't even mentioned in this article. I don't know what they're thinking, where he jumped on the 4th and 13. Like, who jumps on 4th and 13? And he got caught out with a stunt and didn't set the edge, and Fields ran in for a touchdown. Like, we have to recognise that, like, some of our best players are playing badly. And there just seems to be this collective sort of, yeah, but we're 9-4. Oh, but, you know, take some positives. Why are you always looking at the negatives? I'm looking at the negatives because the aim of this season is to win a playoff game, and we're not going to win a playoff game playing the rubbish we've been playing for the last month.
Tom, with that glowing endorsement of how we're doing this year so far, how are you feeling the day after that two-score loss to the Bears?
This is going to sound, Steve, like it's coming directly at you, but I promise you it's not.
It is.
I think my biggest takeaway actually over the last few weeks is, I think that the general, and this is purely a social media thing, right? I think this is as toxic as the fan base has been, even going back to the Patricia era. Because during that era, everyone was, for the most part, pretty aligned in terms of, we hate what's going on, but we weren't really fighting each other. And now it feels like whatever happens, almost to Steve's point, you're not allowed to criticize the team, otherwise you're a hater. But then you're not allowed to defend the team, otherwise you're just a shill. And we just seem to be going at each other the whole time, rather than almost, well, I don't even think there's a solution as such. And part of this, I think, Ant, you were talking about the team needing to mature and it's the next stage in their development. Honestly, and there are fans who have been fans of the Lions a lot longer than me, so this isn't a long, long-term thing. But I think this is a bit of a fan maturation period as well. Because we've had 3 or 4 years of such misery, to be honest, and then we got the hope. And now, because of how the team was playing earlier in the season, we're just expecting perfection and excellence the whole time. Now, that is not glazing over the fact it has been a poor team now for 4 or 5 weeks. And I was definitely someone who, I can't remember the weeks kind of exactly, but 2-3 weeks ago, we had these kind of games. There was one game in particular. I think it was actually the Bears game we won. And I was like, look, that felt like a game where every break seemed to go against us, and somehow we got through it. That's what good teams do. We have had our wake-up calls, and we haven't woken up. So this currently is not a great football team. That being said, the Eagles are going through this right now. It's very rare over a 17-game season you are going to have consistent play, good or bad, unless you're the Panthers, throughout an entire season. We're going to get these peaks and troughs. I think it's unfortunate from a fan standpoint, we got those real highs early in the season rather than late. It was much more enjoyable, let's be honest, the other way around. I know we're not at the end of the season yet, but when your kind of hope disappears and then you're on the upward trend, that is a fun journey to be on. We got that immediate hit with the Chiefs game and even some of those other early games. And we probably fooled ourselves a little bit into thinking we were further ahead of the timeline that we were. In reality, there's a lot of kind of good teams in the NFC, which we are one of, even if we're not playing them right now. We're probably not a great team, and that is okay. Last year, we were a really bad team for half a season, then we were a good team for half a season. This year, we were a great team for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, and now we're probably the wrong side of good for the last few weeks. But this is all part of the journey. I'd love to tell you we're going to win a Super Bowl in February. I think that's probably unlikely. We are on the right kind of trajectory. That being said, I think that a convincing win against the Vikings or someone like that will turn the sentiment back in our favor. Probably we will overcorrect the other way again, but I do think we are not that far away from, if this team does snap out of it, have a convincing win, especially against someone like the Vikings, I think we will come back together and have that right kind of fan energy going into the playoffs. But right now, it's not a great place to be on social media as a Lions fan, which is a little hilarious when you think we are 9-4. versus where we've been over the last few years.
People are traumatized from 2016, like the year we were going to do it. And then you lose the last three of the season. You get booted out in the wild card. People are thinking, oh, God, it's happening again. But and this is a big thing. Like, because I've been doing this on Twitter, defending the record of where we're at now is not saying that you don't know there are problems with this team. I think we all know there are big problems with this team. You know, they are having their issues. But you've also got to look at the development of the team. Year on year, we're seeing big development from this team. Year one, year two, this year. We're already at last year's win tally and we've got four games left. We were there with five games to go. Hopefully going to win the conference. It is bona fide progress forward with a young team in the third year of a complete teardown rebuild. It's like, you know, I don't know what more progress you want this year. Do you want a Super Bowl win? They're not just going to be. They're not going to morph into experienced pros. All these young guys, they're not just going to morph into experienced pros who can handle pressure. They can't. It's the whole part of the process is, you know, tough love. And this is a team that has not lost back-to-back games in over a year now. So that shows you that when they do lose, they learn. You know, you can see the bigger picture here. This is a team. Yeah, it's been spanked a bit more recently than it has that we used to. But they're still winning when they lose. They're not stacking losses. They're not feeling sorry for themselves. They're not learning the lessons. They're still making progress forward. And this is still very much in our hands. So overall, the entire development arc of this team in year three, it's an improvement. And we've got to take other factors into consideration. The injuries, you know, where you're at. The pressure on this team is... I'm sorry, Steve, but I get it. It's been a rubbish month. It has, and we're struggling, but, I mean, what do you want? You wanted a young team built through the draft, but you just want them to dominate every week and to go 14-3 and go straight to the playoffs, and it's not that easy.
You're totally missing my point. You're totally missing my point.
I'm not, though.
I've never said that we're going to win the Super Bowl. I've never said we're going to be in contention for a Super Bowl. I think we should be able to win the division, and we should be able to try and win a playoff game. But to do that, we've got to be playing well, and we've got to be playing well on both sides of the ball. And I feel that people with, you know, like a kind of valid criticism of the team, like me, are being lumped into the lunatic fringe of the Lions. So there were people on Twitter and on social media last night saying we need to start Hendon Hooker against the Denver Broncos. That's absolutely mental. And people saying shit like that don't know anything about football, and they're idiots, and they should be treated as idiots. But you can't put all fans who are critical of the team into that bracket. And the reason why I feel that I'm unhappy about this team is because the one area of the team, the defense, is simply not getting better. And I don't believe fundamentally it's much better than last year. Like, we're papering over cracks. And the reason why I'm pissed is because we've been papering over cracks all season. Like, pretty much since the Chiefs game, the defense has been, like, shaky as fuck. And every time we play a mobile quarterback, we absolutely get our pants pulled down. And you know, we played Justin Fields 3 weeks ago. What has Aaron Glenn been doing to change things up? Because we were actually no better, you could argue slightly worse than we were 3 weeks ago. And for me, that says something's fundamentally wrong with the defensive part of our team. I completely agree on the offense. People calling Amon-Ra St. Brown a dud in articles today. Oh, he was the dud of the team. He's not dropped shit for like 2 years. And he dropped two passes. You know, you've got to give the guy a pass. But the defense has been absolutely shambolic. And I think we've been very lucky to be 9-4 because of the defense. And that's my frustration, is you've got Pride of Detroit, you got like Colton from The Athletic, all during the game tweeting, oh, are you going to blame that on Aaron Glenn? Oh, you know, Jalen Reeves-Mabin's done a sack. Brilliant by Aaron Glenn. Like, look at the bigger picture. That defense isn't getting any better, and Glenn's not improving it.
No, So I was about to say, I have never known a coordinator have more Teflon than him at the minute. But I do get why people are annoyed. I do. But again, you took it look at the flip side of it. Look at our Twitter today. The amount of abuse I've taken for being positive about this and, oh, I don't care about us losing and stuff like that. It's on the flip side. It's just as bad. There is a sect who has come out trying to cause problems here. But I still think overall we do. I mean, like the defense. Your secondary's lost its two most influential players, like, all year. That can't be helped. Like, we've lost Mosley and CJ, who were meant to be the heartbeat of that. The edge room is rubbish. Like, completely rubbish. We thought we were seven deep, and we're not. It's just, unfortunately, the growing pains of this team again. But we are still... The thing is, we are still at 9 wins, and there are only 5 teams. It's hard. And despite all these deficiencies, despite us not playing well, we are still there. I still think that does show a big level of maturation from this team, and we just need to stick with them. But again, that is not me discrediting anyone who is critical. There are reasons to be critical. I just think overall, we're still heading the right way.
Let me bring in Ryan just for a different perspective on all of this. How are you feeling the day after and about the long-term future of the team?
Well, first point is Tom's totally right. The Lions have got just to stand National Football League, we've got one of the worst fan bases in the league on social media. There's just nasty people out there. Like I say, dickheads like Honolulu Blues just going after Jerry. And Jerry blocks him, apparently, in the middle of the game, at like halftime. So I don't know when that happened or not, but they tried to make it out like he blocked them like at halftime. If you go after players personally, well, they're going to make it look a dickhead. But yeah, it's... Yeah, the whole let's play Hen and Hooker thing, you just make yourself look stupid. People last night, man, I've muted One Pride, Lions, everything. I will have the last 3 weeks now between games, I've had a complete cleanse on the timeline. I'll just mute the words. I can't see the tweet. I don't need to because I say, I'm harsh. I can be brutal. I'm never mean. I don't like to fight. But like I say, I've got my own standards. I have my what I deem success and what I deem for the season. If the Lions don't win the division, I'll blow my top. Now that's all I want. Like I say, I will go off one. 12 hours later on this game. Right, so the Packers, for me, I think they're a very good team. Like I say, the Bears, I think, are a rapidly improving team. And I think a lot of people underestimate them, still give them a lot of credit. But what upsets me is yesterday, we beat ourselves. We helped an okay average young team beat us because we killed ourselves. The penalties were just atrocious. Some of the play calls at the wrong times were terrible. A kicker that I have no longer absolutely any faith in whatsoever. I say shanking extra points, I say it. He's the first person I'm cutting in the offseason. He can get in the bin. I've got no faith in him whatsoever. Yeah, drops at costly times. I get people ragging Amon-Ra, like you say. They were a potential drive to get back into the game. But yeah, he's allowed them dropped, I say, because he's earned the right to drop balls.
He has. He's completely earned them after a nearly flawless two seasons.
Yeah, and like I say, player calling. I get it. I get people's frustration. Why is Jameson Williams not? Why doesn't he get the ball? Why doesn't he get targets? Like, say, Goff, like, say, decides not to take the easy check down for a first down, goes for a deep shot. It's like 6 yards underthrown. Like, say, there was no chance ever Jameson was going to get to it. And that's the kind of player where I can't have big explosive plays to Jameson right now because Goff and him have got no rhythm. And I've seen it like every game this season. They're not in sync hardly ever. And the catches he makes half the time, he's coming back for them or readjusting them. So I'm fairly in the camp of, I don't give Jameson Williams, I give him snaps, but I won't sacrifice the team winning or losing for targets. Like I said, when I think we're ready, he gets the lion's share. Right now he's not. But yeah, the stats are misleading. Like, Jameer Gibbs had a run of 34 yards. And then he had 26 yards and what is over 11 carries? That's miserable. That was absolutely pathetic, our effort to run the ball. It was either the wrong time or we just got stuffed. Like, it was just bad. 12 hours on, I'm very upset because a young team, let's say, it's been gifted this opportunity to try and defend this lead and win the division. And it's going to come down to the wire. And if we control our own destiny, Minnesota control it just as much as we do. If they were to beat us twice, they could take it on head to head. I say we're both very much in that same kind of position. I do not want to be going into a decider in that last game. I wanted the division wrapped up comfortably by them with a bow on. I don't see that happening. I'm going to learn a lot about these young players and, like I said, their resilience, their toughness, the coaches. And, yeah, there's a lot of football left to be played. We've hit a bad spot at a terrible time. Like I said, the Packers firmly breathing down our neck in a great run. The Vikings yesterday, I watched the game. They were horrible, but they won. Like I said, they kept a Raiders team at bay for 60 full minutes and they found a way to win. That, to me, earns a little bit of credit. Like I said, it was a horrible game, but it's hard to win bad games when they drag you into a mire. But I've got to respect that, so yeah. The NFC North is about to be an absolute, just a battleground, and I don't know who's going to come out on top. But yeah, yesterday was a tough pill to swallow because I fucking hate the Bears. I don't like the Vikings. Actually, I don't give a shit about the Vikings. They're irrelevant to me. I just don't interest me. Packers, hate them. Bears, I despise them because they just raise their game when they play us. They just find that little extra gear every time they play us to put out their best performances. And that irritates me. Like I said, they do not fear us. And we need to get that back in check.
So I'm going to... I'm not going to try and draw the ire from everyone, but I am going to stick my neck out and say that for everyone who is saying that defense was a problem yesterday, losing their mind. I really think, and maybe this is a low bar to clear, 100%. I thought the defense played a bloody good game yesterday. I really, really do. Or at least vastly improved on previous games. And I'll justify it by saying that basically the offense put them in terrible spots all day. Now, we've had problems with not gaining pressure. Fields took how many hits? I think we hit him like 6 or 7 times in the game. And I'm not talking just sacks, but like he was walking into massive hits. Like we were putting him under big pressure. We injured him. And then he wasn't able to run as much. I thought that was a big deal in the game. Kaminsky, I thought, had a terrific game. He just put him Fields under pressure the whole time. But, you know, that's a lot in the second quarter. But I thought we actually did that in the second half as well. We went into the half ahead. And then they get a field goal in the first drive that they have. We then let them have the ball at their 48 to start, following drive at midfield, following drive at our 29, following drive at our 30, following drive at their 38 after we turn it over on downs. They didn't have a drive, apart from the very, very first drive of that first half that started in their own 25. Even the first drive started at the 28. You put defense in such a bad spot. And in those drives, we held them to a field goal, a punt, a field goal, a punt, and then a couple of touchdowns in the middle of it. But when you put a bad defense in that spot against a team that it struggled against so much, and they put Fields under that much pressure, and what let us down was bad tackling, which we really haven't seen all season. Anzalone was the biggest culprit of that, which was really disappointing to see. But coming back off injury with Handle masked up, kind of putting him on a hide into nothing. It seemed a bit unfair to rag on him, really, but that didn't help. D-line tackling was atrocious, but they put the Bears in bad spots, and then situational football just got away from us a little bit. But the coverage was great. There were 3 really good PBUs in there. They had some zone coverage beaters. That happens in a game. You can't always cover brilliantly, but the coverage was improved. The pressure was improved. The tackling let us down a bit. But the defense kept us in the game. Even later on, we were in the game. And the offense couldn't execute. The offense couldn't get the 4th-and-1. They were running on bad downs. The offense lost us the game. For the first time, when people said the offense have lost us the game, I'm on board with you. And actually, the reason why we lost this game in totality, and Amon-Ra has earned the right, I agree with you, to have a bad game. He did have a bad game. Who else had a bad game? Jared Goff had a bad game. The O-line was terrible. And then some of the better players on our defense, like Hansel, only had bad games. But other more peripheral players really stepped up. And it's masked from the fact that we've lost by 15 points to the fucking Bears. But this was an improved performance.
How did they do on the first drive when the offense hadn't even touched the ball? Like, his Luke Getsy's play calling sheet will fit on a matchbox. It's that small and that, you know, there's no creativity to it whatsoever. And they got absolutely mashed. That puts you on the back foot from the start of the game. That first drive is disgusting in every sense of the word, up until DJ Moore taking a snap of his own and running it in without anyone coming near him. It's like he had a force field around him. Like, that's inexcusable. The amount of positions when you put them in third and long, fourth and 13, the entire goddamn world knows that they're not going to run a play because they ain't inventive enough to have a play on fourth and 13. What do? They jump. Indiscipline. Coverage gets burned. Like, no, they're not getting an excuse for this one. For all the bad position, you know, there was good in there, but in key plays, when you've got them on third down, you can get them off the field, you blew it. And that first drive was terrible. Ain't getting off easy on this one just because the offense has a bad day.
Let's forget the offense for a minute. And I'm absolutely in the camp that the offense has got a lot to answer to in this game because it was shocking. But just on the defense itself, they scored 10 unanswered points in the first quarter. They carved us open like a turkey in the first drive. They scored 18 unanswered points in the second half. We didn't get any turnovers. And, you know, exactly the things that we said, we don't want to see this. You know, we're on the podcast with the Bear guys. And, you know, we're saying we cannot leave Jerry Jacobs one-on-one with DJ Moore. And what happens? Jerry is one-on-one with DJ Moore. And it's like a Lamborghini going past a Ford Escort at the lights. It's just like awful. But and to get back onto Ryan's point, the fans shouldn't be going at Jerry on Twitter about that. They should be going against the person who put him in that spot that he's up one-on-one with DJ Moore with no safety help. And that's Aaron Glenn.
Kind of also an iffy as well, if he didn't do much for it. But yeah, I agree. You cannot let them off for this game at all. There's just... This is his third year as an OC. Ben Johnson, everyone's having a go at Ben now because it's popular to have a go at Ben because Aaron's had his lumps thrown at him and that. So yeah, great. But now everyone's going in for Aaron. It's like Glenn... Has Glenn had a period of success with this defense like Ben has had with the offense? No. Like, he's not had it as an elite top five unit in the league in the 3 years that he's been here. He doesn't get the same sort of... He hasn't built up the stash of credit that Ben has. Ben can have a bad game. Ben can have a bad patch because we know he can do it better. Aaron has not to this point. So he doesn't get away with... He doesn't get away with a game like this. For the first time, like we say, first time, offense has really shafted us in this one. It doesn't mean that, like, he wins by default because he was slightly less worse than the offense. Still bad. Still a lot of stuff. Basic stuff that you should be able to install in there, which is down on him as well as the players. I feel like going after the players is just, it's a cop-out at this point.
And also, like, it's the lack of development and it's players going backwards. Like, look at Kirby last season and where he is now. I mean, even Tracy Walker... We know Tracy Walker has been a decent player for us, but he's massively dropped off in terms of his performance. Like, that has to rest with the defensive coach and staff.
Right, let me take you through the drive summary and just some key points in the game, and maybe we can talk about them in particular. First drive, as you mentioned, was not the best. Anzalone only started off with a missed tackle on Dont Foreman on the second play. Could have put him in third and long instead of third and two. Field slips out of a tackle, which would have stopped him, gains 13. Fields then with his own read for 12, and then it was finished off with that DJ Moore wildcat fake handoff to Justin Fields. I think was one of the prettier plays I've seen this season, to be honest, just because when you got Fields in motion, you can't ignore that. And yeah, beautiful design. 7-0 Chicago. Lions first drive. Lions go run to start, put him in a bad situation, but then an incredible catch A really good throw by Jared Goff to Sam LaPorta in tight coverage, snagged it. But then tripping by Graham Glasgow sets us back to second and 21. Amon-Ra gets back 11 to third and 10, but then a sack by Ngakoue means we have to punt. Bears come back on third and 8 from their 11. Hutch and Alex Anzalone get to Fields for a safety, but Fields gets out of it and manages to scamper from the end zone line to the 30, which is just a massive insult. Third and 4, then they actually convert to Robert Tonyan, but Alex Anzalone's done some holding as well, so they convert anyway. Fields with a great throw to Mooney versus Sutton. Sutton's jumping the route. It's going for 6, but Fields put such velocity on it just outside him that Mooney manages to snag it and kind of go around the outside for quite a few yards. Third and 9, we dial up some pressure. Maybe one of the better designed plays that we've had on defense this season. Third and 9, Jalen Reeves-Maybin comes up with the sack. Field goal's good from 46 yards and 10 to nothing there. Lions' second drive. Amazing run off right tackle by Jahmyr Gibbs for 36 yards. Great play design. Got Penei Sewell coming into like the center position or near the center position. And he runs outside of the right tackle, which is obviously where you don't think he's going to go. Then we take a delay of game penalty with the play clock and the game clock basically aligns, but I think they dropped the ball there, unfortunately. Third and 10, running back screen. Out wide, Jahmyr Gibbs. It's a walk-in touchdown if he catches it, but he just misses it. And on fourth and 10, we go for it, and it's picked off by Jalen Johnson throwing to Sam LaPorta. It just wasn't there, but J-Mo was for the touchdown over the top, which is a bit of a shame that Goff missed that. Never mind. We did force a fumble on Jalen Johnson on that play, but the ball went out of bounds before we could recover it, and a flag actually ends up setting the Bears back after that. But I'll stop there because it feels like we kind of turned it around a little bit from this moment onwards. Bears got a great start, boys. The more touchdown we've kind of mentioned, Glasgow tripping kind of killed us on that first drive. Anzalone with some missed tackles, the holding. He had the late hit as well in this period of play. Outbounds, was it a late hit? I have my own opinion on that. And then Gibbs missed a touchdown, and we went for it on fourth down. A lot happened. And basically none of it went in our favour, save the LaPorta catch early.
Yeah, it was quite eventful. Right. We were told, was it like first quarter, like there was it, I don't know, it was like Chris or Aaron, like they spoke to Alex, they're like, yeah, he said I'm fine, I can tackle, just can't catch. Couldn't tackle, could it? Like I said, missed a huge sack, missed a big tackle to force further along, and he just whiffed on them. Like I said, they weren't exactly moves, they were just poor efforts. I say penalties, blatant tripping. Graham knows that. He didn't even try to disguise it. Yeah, like I say, some great throws, like Goff to LaPorta and the Fields to Mooney. That was beautiful. The coverage could probably not have been any better. It literally goes past Sutton's fingertips. And like I say, Mooney makes a great play. So there were some big players. Like I said, the great, like I said, Jahmyr Gibbs, one good player, big of the game. That lovely run where he broke off, tore down the sideline. That was it. We didn't really see him for the rest of the game because they bottled him up. But yeah, it was just, yeah, the drop by Gibbs. Like I say, potential touchdown. For a second, I was taken back to Swift in his rookie game, dropping the game winner against Chicago. That felt reminiscent of that. But yeah, frustrating. I thought it was a penalty on Alex, if I'm honest. It wasn't rough, but it was unnecessary. He didn't need to do it. I think he was pissed off because I think he'd missed some tackles. I think he just decided, I'm going to take out on someone. So it was silly, but it was avoidable. Like I say, the interception wasn't terrible, only because they got a big block and they got a block in the back panel, didn't they? Like I say, otherwise that wouldn't have been like a punt because it would have got all the way to like midfield. So we got a break on that. The penalty certainly helped us there, but yeah, it was far from a mile, and the throw wasn't even. It didn't look relatively close. Like I say, it wasn't great. So turnovers have reared their ugly head again. That's quite worrying. Like I say, the O line wasn't great. Like I say Decker was blown up on him, that Ngakoue sack. He absolutely just got pads underneath him and just drilled him, didn't he? Like I say, like a lamppost. Like Decker, oof, boy, that was a rough day, and he'll know it. Like I say, they made mince of him, but yeah. it was a rough start, and I was going to be thinking like, oh no, not one of them days. But it was to be. Yeah, but yeah, we started off great, and then like I say, things. It's a one score game. Like nothing has gone our way, and you think we can shake this off. We've been here before. Been here before a lot of the season. Started games kind of cold. Things not going our way. So yeah, it was frustrating.
If you're going to go and trespass on someone's porch, don't let them come out with a baseball bat and twonk you around the head before you start fighting back. That's what we've done twice against the Bears now. They've come looking for us. We've been stood there on the porch and we've let them hit us first. And the one thing you cannot do with the Chicago Bears team is let them get in front, because they play down, they play dirty, they play their run game. It's the only way they're effective at playing their game is when they're in front. And twice we've come and let them take double-digit leads over us early. The offense, just stupid penalties, not getting going. The defense, I dread to think how many times the Bears have come out and scored opening drive touchdowns on us. Now, they do it all the time. We can't adjust. We seem bemused by Luke Getsy and his offensive genius. And it's really concerning for a team that prides itself on fighting hard and being that deep-down gritty team. You've got to be gritty for 60 minutes, not come out and be as flat as we were on that. And it was really, really disappointing. You thought they'd learn from last time, and they didn't. I mean, when it comes to the pick, I feel now Dan, after a shaky start as a play caller, making these decisions, he's leveled out to be a very good play caller situationally, when to go for points, when to not go for points. I think now we're getting very close to the NFC North. He's turned back to his, he wants to do this emphatically. Like, he's going full aggressive on calls again, not really taking points when maybe he should just to start the hour. I wasn't enamored with going for that fourth down. I think in that situation, take some points, get on the board, get the board moving, because the longer that zero's on there, the more pressure builds up. And I think he's just overcompensating because we're getting close to really doing some good stuff. And I think he's just allowing that to cloud him a bit. So I was disappointed with that. And we just gave them all the momentum. But what I will say, after that pick, you were very right. Jalen Johnson had the ball forced out. Who forced it out? J-Mo, all the way into the end zone to try and make his pass, sprints all the way back down the field to punch that thing out and try and get the ball back. I am now getting very pissed with J-Mo's usage. You earn your stripes here on this team, and you earn your reps, and no one is working harder than him right now. Like, to do all the dirty work on this team, to do the blocking, to put in that extra effort to get that ball punched out, he is putting in work and he is putting in effort, and he is not getting the targets, and that is now starting to piss me off. At first, yeah, you got to earn your stripes. He's earned his stripes. Give him the ball. Design some plays for him. Why are we not using him in motion? We saw it last week. We started to get him into games, and then we're like, nah, you know what? We're not going to do it. Well, that man's earned his stripes, and you start using him. Really, really, really annoying me now.
Anyone else want? Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, so I don't want to labor this point. For the first two drives, I think it was a good summary of kind of what we were talking about earlier. The first drive, it looked like we had Fields wrapped up, collapsed the pocket. He gets out and makes a play. There's a few kind of poor execution pieces. And in general, it was a pretty good first drive. I mean, offensive coordinators are going to draw up 15 plays to start a game. They executed them pretty well. They scored. And everyone, but again, I say everyone, every kind of angry social media fan said kind of, it's a disaster, fire everyone, we're awful. And then the Lions had their possession, and we didn't convert on 3rd and 10, and Taylor Deck gets run over, and we're like, offense is awful, fire everyone as well. Well, not fire everyone, but the reality is it came down to a couple of execution plays. We mentioned the tripping on Glasgow. It's pretty hard to get a first down when you're 2nd and 21. These things happen. It's poor execution, but it is what it is. Defense again on that first drive, some execution things, but actually it was not. It was a pretty good drive, I thought, and especially that touchdown play I thought was delicious, to be perfectly honest. So, look, these things happen. Massive overreactions from everyone, to be honest. I think sometimes, like Justin Fields, and I'm going to get eyebrows raised from this, I think he's an underrated athlete. I think because he tears up the Lions, we get so frustrated with the fact that you could make an argument he's the best athlete to ever play the quarterback position. Like, you're not really going to convince me Mike Vick was a better athlete than Justin Fields. He's built like a brick shithouse. So when people run off, fall off tackles, it's frustrating, but you kind of get it when he's built like a linebacker and he runs a 4-3, right? So I guess it's a very roundabout way of saying the whole day, really, it was a lot of execution issues. And there are definitely some deeper set issues than that, which I think we touched on earlier in the pod. But like these things happen in games, let alone in weeks of the season and in quarters of the season and in full seasons, where you do have drives where you commit a penalty and you don't convert as a result. And you do have drives where you miss a tackle and you kind of give up touchdowns and things like that. So it just in general felt like big overreactions everywhere. Now, on the fourth down, I don't think I had a strong view either way, to be perfectly honest. What I would say is, I think we saw a little bit later, Riley Patterson is a bit of a mess right now. We knew we couldn't kick that. If you convert that one out of every five times, your expected points is probably one plus one, something like that, on the assumption that you're not always going to score a touchdown, you might score a field goal. If you punt the ball back, I don't believe that additional 15 yards of field position or whatever is going to deliver that plus 1 points and make it harder for them to score. So it is what it is. I think you live and die by the sword. That's how the Lions have always gone. So I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I don't think it was egregious either way. Yeah.
But I mean, if you're talking about plus 1 point, Riley Patterson only has to hit from 52 about 33% of the time to equal that. And I think he's probably a better kicker than that. And a botched snap on a PAT, which we'll come on to in a bit, doesn't mean he's a terrible kicker. He was hitting them from 55 into the wind in practice. And I realise that's not in game. And I realise they don't trust him. And maybe they don't trust the long snapper as well. I don't know. But I kind of feel like if you only need to hit 33% and that's your break-even point, take the easier play, 33% higher than 20.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. What I obviously, if you make that, if you miss that kick, then they are getting the ball at whatever the snap is, right? So yeah, like then you do have that field position piece as well. I would agree, but I think that I don't think the team even necessarily has that faith in him making one out of three. Mm-hmm. What I can't speak to, and that's purely because I don't know the physics behind it, I'm taking this from golf, but the colder it is, the ball isn't going to travel as far. So we've got a guy who can't kick from 50 yards in steel conditions in a dome, let alone a little bit of wind. I actually don't know which direction it was going on for that kick specifically, but it's going to be harder to kick on a grass field, outdoors, in cold conditions with a guy who hasn't shown he can hit 50 yards or over 50 yards anyway. So I kind of understand it either way. Yeah. I saw some people lose their mind about it. And I saw some people say, no, you should absolutely go for it. It just wasn't one of those plays either way. It was in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it influenced. I don't think it had as greater impact on the game as some people seem to be making out.
Steve and Ash, let me take you through to the half and then I'll throw it to you for a kind of overview on the total first half. So we had, where were we actually at here? We were at third drive. So Bears third drive, Fields with a lovely throw to Kmet for 41 yards on a zone beater. Starts in line on the right-hand side, goes deep out through to the left-hand side. End up in third and two at the Detroit 40. Fields with a quarterback run for 1 yard. And then on fourth and one, a weird toss play to DJ Moore when a counter toss with all the offensive line going the other way. Lions not fooled. Melifonwu with a huge tackle for a loss of turnover on downs. Lions on the third drive then pick up some steam. Third and three, false start on Jonah Jackson. So kind of running theme here, unfortunately, there. But third and eight, Amon-Ra St. Brown wide receiver screen with Saul out in front of him was quite a nice wrinkle. Ended up only getting 5 yards there. So we're back to and three, but this time it's fourth down. And maybe the throw of the game with Jared Goff to Donovan Peoples-Jones kind of threading it through four defenders. It was fantastic. And DPJ has kind of looked all at sea receiving and running routes to this point. But that was a really good play by him. J-Mo then had an end around, which he took before. Amon-Ra took a pop pass for about 5.5 yards, left it third and inches. And then we threw a counter toss play of our own. Only this time, Jahmyr Gibbs had totally wide open field and ran in for a 12-yard score. PAT was no good. I'll let the guys talk more about how I'm totally long about long snappers in just a second. Only his second miss of the season at extra points. That makes it 10-6 in favor of Chicago. Bears fourth drive. Fields has a quarterback keeper. Kaminsky levels him. Hutchinson and Commission have a joint kind of sack. I feel like it should be equally attributed, but it was given to Hutch. And then Hutch in Fields' face forces a throwaway just over his hands, but that easily could have been a sack or worse for Fields. If that gets deflected up by Hutchinson's hands, it could be a pick six. You know, so nice drive generally by the Lions on defense there. And then they get the ball back after all of that, after they punt. 5:15 to go, and they run a beautiful four-minute offense. Gibbs, great jump cut to avoid a tackle for a loss for 4 yards to start the drive. Amazing catch by Brock Wright for 4 yards, where it looked like it was slipping out of his hands, and he manages to snag it under heavy pressure. Third and two, nice catch over the middle by Sam Laporta for 10. Nice move again by Jahmyr Gibbs with a jump cut. Looked like he might go for no gain, ends up getting four. Third and three, handoff to Gibbs, and somehow through three guys, he got 3 yards. And then on third and four, we want a running back screen to Gibbs. And he span moved twice down the near sideline to get away from guys to get the third and four. And then straight after that, we have Goff to Khalif Raymond for 5, and then a slant to Josh Reynolds in the end zone for 8. Touchdown Lions, PAT this time's good. Lions up 13-10. With 5:15 to go, we end up burning all their timeouts and there's 25 seconds on the clock. So they've managed to do this a lot at the end of halves where they managed to bleed clock and make sure it's the last possession. And the Bears try. Fields deep to Mooney. Really nice pass breakup by Jerry. And then Fields sacked by Kamish again. That's your half. Lions up by 3. Lions very much owns that second quarter. Steve, it was hard not to feel positive coming out of that. I know that the Bears score points at a rate of knots, but it was all Lions in the second quarter.
And, you know, this is, I would imagine, why a lot of people are frustrated, because, you know, in the second quarter, we played some really, really good Lions football. Complementary football, both sides of the ball doing their job. We had some pressure. Hutch, Kamish both looked dangerous. We were bottling up Fields. You know, so it shows we can do it. But, you know, like I think the Cole Kmet one, I think going back to, I can't remember if it was Tom or Ryan, that Cole Kmet throw would never have been made with CJ on the field, because he's that communicator that makes sure that when a tight end drifts, you know, in between the linebacker and the safety, that someone is on it. And Kmet was just in acres of space. Like, there was no one anywhere near him and no one picked him up, and everyone was just, I watched it back again today and everyone's just stood there looking at each other. And it's that way you feel that CJ on the field, he would be screaming at people, and I don't think that catch would have been made. But, you know, the offense was kind of purring. Gibbs was looking good. The blocking was pretty good. And at this point, because, you know, what we know about Goff is that when things are pretty near perfect, Goff's a great QB. When he's under pressure, things unravel very quickly. And we had this nice little window of like 10, 15 minutes where we, you know, we were kind of protected him well. So, you know, that's the frustrating thing. We can do it. And we played 10 or 12 minutes of really nice football and kind of showed that the Bears are not that good, because we did kind of like, you know, carve through them. And forced, you know, had a couple of big stops.
Ash, first half?
Yeah, so speaking about that Kmet play, I know Matt obviously heard me say this yesterday, but yeah, that just pissed me off, because I put in the preview, Kmet, when you play zone against him, he's really damn good because he can find those holes and will just drift between them and find the spot and sit down in them. You play man against him, you put someone close to him up in his grill, and he really drops off. He's like, I think his PFF grade drops by like 20 points in terms of receiving when you're playing man against him compared to zone. So that, yeah, that's really upset me. But at the same time, that second quarter, it was looking good. Like, Matt could probably testify for us. At the end of that first quarter, I was already at the cliff of despair. It's like, oh God, here we go again. And they just pulled me back in by playing the good football. Everything looked kind of okay. Yeah, sometimes things didn't go as well as we were planning, but for the most part, it looks okay. And I was like, okay, yeah, the Bears have had their scripted drives. Defense came out and played some good stuff against us in the first quarter. But for now, we've worked out, okay, this is how we're adjusting. We've made those adjustments early. Rather than wait until the half, we've gone, okay, we need to do this, this, and this. And it's worked. And then went in at halftime, and it just seems like they just sat there and twiddled their thumbs while the Bears then made adjustments of their own, and it just went all downhill from there.
Any other thoughts on that second quarter, boys?
Yeah, great. Only problem is when you, if an airline only landed 15 out of 60 planes, you'd lose your pilot's license, wouldn't it? It was the only good quarter of football we played. So in the words of Porky Pig, that was all, folks. Because that's all we, that is the only quarter of offense we mustered. And that was what's frustrating. We saw everything we wanted to see. We saw Goff in relaxed and, you know, like in rhythm. Goff is a rhythm quarterback, like you say. It just takes one penalty or one bad player and it can wreck his drive. Like I say, he just when he's laser focused in, tunnel vision, he's one of the best in the league. And for 12 minutes, we basically saw it. And defense, what were the Bears doing on that like fourth and one? A quarterback is like 6'5" and they don't sneak Justin Fields. They go for stupid toss. That was weird. That was an odd play, I thought, like say that. So yeah, but yeah, if he makes a great play, we get the ball, like say that great, that 4-minute drive. Jahmyr Gibbs was like just stupid on that, like that last drive when I like say spin moves, jump cuts, stiff arms. He just went all Madden. He just making guys look stupid, like say, and it was just brilliant. Like I say, that was everything I wanted to see. It's so weird that we're 9-4, but there's just times where like it's back to the Stafford days where the offense has to play perfect. It has to play perfect or things don't go right because the defense is struggling. But yeah, I was going in the half, I think we've not played well. We've shot ourselves in the foot time after time. We've missed tackles. We've made boneheaded plays. Somehow, we're in the lead. And if you offer me that 9 to 10 times out of 10, I'll take it. Like you say, but then I remember, oh, wait, it's the half. And we're absolutely fucking miserable in the third quarter. I saw a post on Twitter of all the third quarter opening drives. Honestly, I wanted to kill myself. Like on Netflix, when Hannah said 13 reasons why, like say that's why she took her own life. I thought, well, this tweet, like say that could have been synopsis of that whole Netflix show. Because it was painful. And it was also 13 games. Wow, that just worked really well. Like say, it was like punt, turnover downs, fumble, first play. There was one touchdown. One touchdown in our first possession in the third quarter in 13 games. But I just thought this. I thought, I don't know what's going to happen in the third quarter, so I'm going to save this second quarter and I'm just going to hold on to that memory like Vince McMahon when he just goes.
You know what? I've got a working theory behind this because I saw that drive chart and I'm there thinking, well, we took an Iowa tight end in the first round of the draft and, you know, our third quarter performance has been like an Iowa game drive. Like that is what you get from an Iowa game. Punt, turnover on downs, fumble. You'll get one touchdown because one team will just be really bad and unlucky against them. But it's like, oh, man, that reads like an Iowa game chart. Like, it's that bad. But that first half is summed up in, like, four words. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. That is literally it. You get the bad version in the first quarter, you get the really good version in the second quarter, and there's no sort of in between where you can be just good on both sides of the ball and win games.
Remember the Cole Kmet as well.
I hate him.
Cole Kmet is going to be what Kyle Rudolph was for the Vikings. He tortured his whole career. I hated playing Kyle Rudolph. Cole Kmet is going to be our next big nemesis, and I tell you what, he's the next star tight end in the league.
I hope someone burns his turkey for Christmas.
I think he's brilliant. I think Cole Kmet is, don't upset me, I think he's the second best tight end in the NFC North. And I don't have Sam first, so that's how I currently feel.
Okay. I'm going to petition you to make all of your references Looney Tunes. by the way, because I feel like the Bears turning around at half time and saying to the Lions, I tore a putty cat, kind of works. Sorry. Any other thoughts on the first half?
Wouldn't it be cardiac cat, not pussy cat? That's what they are for us.
All right, let's move on with the second half then. So Lions come out of the half with the ball up by three, and Goff comes out with a play action pass, first play, almost gets picked. Not the best throw in the world. Third and six, we get blitzed. It's really well picked up by Monty. I thought he had a fantastic day in pass protection, actually underrated. He picked up a lot of blitzes by himself. Goff sees J-Mo streaking clear over the top and just underthrows him. J-Mo can't locate it, but even if he did, he wasn't catching it. And this going for a touchdown if he actually gets the air right on that throw. So that's a real shame. End up punting there. Bears, sixth drive, throw to Mooney for 16. How holding wasn't called here, I'm not sure, because the arm's up here to chop Hutchinson. I mean, I know we go on week to week about Hutchinson not getting some of the holes called, but that was not great. Herbert run and a huge hit by Alex Anzalone on Khalil Herbert. I mean, I'm surprised that Herbert wasn't going off injured after that one. You heard the thwack. Fields then with an easy throw to Velus Jones Jr. Our big cushion given. It was like third down and two, and we gave him 8 yards. And like, what are you doing? Nice tackle by Alex Anzalone on DJ Moore. Then on third and eight, you put DJ Moore one-on-one versus Jerry Jacobs, and he just runs a quick out for 9 yards, not getting there. Did exactly the same play in exactly the same situation 3 weeks ago. Really, really frustrating. What else do we have? Jerry DPI versus Jones Jr. Only a 4-yarder, but he did get there early, which was a shame. And then I think Tyler Scott, maybe his only reception of the game. Tyler Scott's only reception of the game. And it went for 11 yards all the way down to the Detroit 7. Thought he looked really good, just didn't get any opportunities with the ball. Nice run play by Jerry and Barnes to stop Herbert on first down. Then a PBU by Kirby in the end zone against DJ Moore. And then on third and goal from the 7, Fields hit really hard by Benito Jones and having to throw the ball out the end zone to avoid the sack. Field goal's good from 25 yards. We go in, tie ball game, Lions again have the ball. Saul now full starts. Not fantastic. Goff play action pass almost picked by Brisker this time. Now, I don't think there's any prospect of that one getting picked, but he got a good hand to it. Goff then a poor throw to Amon-Ra St. Brown, could never really get caught. And then on third and 15, checks it down short to Jahmyr Gibbs, who can't do any magic, gets 12, but we've got a punt. And then Trent Taylor almost returns it all the way back, only bailed out by Jack Fox tripping him with it by his ankle. 31-yard return, though. Then on the Bears, seventh possession, holding on Lucas Patrick on Levi Onwuzurike, who actually had an underrated day rushing the passer. Third and 9, pass blocked by Jane Reeves-Maybin. They're forced to punt. Lions get the ball back, run for no gain, tackle for a loss. Third and 1 incomplete. We give the ball back to them straight away, which is a real shame. Bears, eighth possession, and here's where they start to pull away. Third and 4, great throw to Cole Kmet. And Anzalone is in perfect coverage here. Really, really tight. Not unlike the Sam Laporta catch in the first quarter, but just a great throw and a great catch. Challenged by Detroit, but the call was upheld. You can see why, because it wasn't really caught, but it never hit the ground. So, and he's not out of bounds either, so it's a catch. And then a throw under pressure by Fields. Called incomplete on the field. It wasn't a sack. Knee was still up. Hit an offensive lineman in the leg. Not called for grounding. It clearly is grounding. They call on the field that the hit affected the throw. But as Jeremy Reinsman on Pride of Detroit has rightly pointed out, that rule doesn't apply in that situation. So the officials just botched the call. So they get a chance on fourth and 13. Ant says they're not going to run a play. If they don't, it's a fantastic heads-up play by the center who knows exactly what he's looking for to get someone to jump. Don't really know if they're going to run a play there, but it's not like they're trying to get 5 yards out of him or anything. I know that Dan's obviously really pissed off about the non-call for grounding, but I bet he's also annoyed that he weren't called for encroachment rather than anything else. But I guess he wasn't unimpeded to the quarterback either. But gets Hutch to jump. And Moore just torches Jerry, 37-yard touchdown. PAT is blocked by Romeo Aquara, returned by Benito to about halfway, but couldn't get any further. makes it 19-13. And I'll stop there. Boys, it was a dire third quarter, basically for both teams up until that late touchdown. And even then, Lions defended well, and then Hutch just has a brain fart moment and we're down by six.
Yeah, to speak on the sort of jump outside, Fields did say in a post-game presser that they weren't going to do anything. They were trying to get us to jump offside. And we fell for it, which is great. But yeah.
Fourth and 13. Fourth and 13, and you got Getsy as your play caller. You were not calling a play. Like, exactly, just not at all. To borrow to another.
We knew what were coming. We knew we'd come out cold. Like you say, Goff. Goff almost throws two interceptions. Some of the balls are coming out. The timing's off. They're wobbly. He's had too much Earl Grey at halftime or a Bovril. And he's like, he's just too cozy. Like, there's no zip. There's no zip on the balls. Like you say, and then.
I think Goff needs a Bovril. I'd like to see Goff with a Bovril. I think that might perk him up a bit.
Every drive, like you say, we're in like third and long. Like you say, and like, it's check downs. We're giving Gibbs the ball and we're saying, like, Gibbs, do us a favour, go beat like every defender and get like those 11 yards back. I know you're magic, but I mean, come on. Like, give the guy a break, like you say, because through the air, it wasn't good. But this is where I lean into the defence. I say, for a long part of that third quarter, kept giving the ball back to the offence. Like I say, pass breakups, like I say, run stuffs, like I say, penalties. Like I say, the Bears have come out and they look just as bad as us. And that's rare that teams come out and look just as bad as us in the third quarter. But the offence continues to stall, bad plays, poor execution. And eventually, Chicago, they get it together. And it was going to happen. Like I said, the defense has given two free drives. They've almost returned a punt. Like I said, Jack Fox saves it. And ultimately, like I said, we were never in a position to win the game and we didn't need that timeout. I never saw the challenge. Like, I'd never thought that was never going to be overturned. If I trapped the ball, went down there, I thought someone upstairs might have said otherwise, but he didn't. Oh, luckily, it hurt us. But yeah. I say, should have been grounding. I'm going to give equal blame to Aiden and Jerry. I know Aiden came out of the game after and he looked like he'd been bawling his eyes out. Then he looked like he had tears in his eyes, like, I'm sorry I jumped. Shouldn't have jumped. Jerry shouldn't have just let get breezed by. But also, there was no one over the top to help him. There was just no security blanket. So it was a disaster. And like I say, they were prime opportunists. Like I say, as soon as they see that jump, like I say, they just go after our weak link, as Jerry is seen by a lot of teams. A lot of teams do pick on him. Like I say, that can't be helped. You've got to put guys in positions where you give them a little bit of protection. And yeah, extra point blocked. I mean, it's in Benito's hands. So it was never going to go that far, right? Like I say, it was kind of like Citroen Picasso rumbling downfield, like I said, like a Seat, big but agile. Yeah, he was never going to really return that one, was it? But yeah, at that point, I said, game over. Defense, they're tired. They've given up the big play. They've had two or three times to give the ball back to Goff. It didn't look great. And we've gone away from the run, or we're struggling with it. And I just think, yeah, like we've blown it. Like I say, we've come out and we've seen the same things repeating itself. Slow starts, shooting ourselves in the foot. And we've let Bears like a lead. The Bears now had to defend a lead. They don't want to play from behind. They want to play on the front foot. We've given them the front foot and we've given them all the motivation they now need. Because like I said, the offense has kind of fallen apart and it kind of felt like the fat lady was about to start gargling the salt water. She was warming up.
To coin more Looney Tunes phrases, the offense took the wrong turn at Albuquerque and went in the wrong direction towards the wrong end zone. That's what they did in the third quarter. They just didn't go in the right direction. And again, I'm going to come back to J-Mo. When you're not using JMO, you don't present a deep threat downfield. When you don't present a deep threat downfield, what do defenses like the Bears love to do? They love to stuff the box against your run game, and they'll bring their DBs up to cover in the short, intermediate passing game. And the Bears defense thrives on that. They thrive on being able to be aggressive, bring these guys up and stop us playing. And because you're not targeting JMO, because you're not even attempting to get him involved in the game, they don't for a second believe you pose a threat downfield. And that's what happened with all our drives. We tried to run the ball on first and second down. We tried to pass the ball on first and second down. We tried all sorts of varieties of combos to get our drives going. And the Bears, for 1 second, did not, they didn't respect our offense because we didn't even try and make them spread out. And that's where the issue is. Too many three and outs, putting our below average defense on the field and gassing them out, as Ryan said, to a point where they just can't keep making stops. They are a good enough defense to make stops for a high scoring offense to give you good margins of victory. They can't keep bailing you out when your point's down. And it all comes down to the scheming. Like, you've got to take deep shots downfield and you've got to use your playmakers and you've got to spread them out because the Bears excel. We played right into their hands. We gave them no reason to not keep their safeties and corners deep. We gave them no reason, you know, to believe that we could do anything different. That is what happened. And no amount of good play calling in the world will overcome that because they don't respect our deep threat, because our deep threat he's not been allowed to do what he's meant to do.
Our offense was like it was like an under 11 football team. You know, where like an under 11 football team, they just play like either side of the center circle, and everyone's like bunching, and like the PE teacher's going like nuts, going spread out. Well, that's what our offense is like. Everyone's on top of each other, and it's easy for the Bears to cover. And you know, we've seen progress from Jameson. You know, and as Ant rightly points out, the guy has been doing everything he can other than catch a ball because he's not getting the targets. But in terms of blocks and the effort he's putting in, and we've really seen him progress, and he's made a couple of really big catches. But, you know, he gets, how many snaps does he get? He gets...
You got about 60% this game.
58% of snaps. And, you know, and this is like a young player, but you want to see them developing. On defense, Brian Branch only got 52% of snaps. Why? You know, we want to see these players developing and being given more responsibility, not less.
No. And you've got a plethora of attacking talent to you. When you use them all, defenses have to respect everybody. And when you're not using them, they don't respect you. It's great because, again, I had no problems with the play call selections. They were trying everything. They were trying all manner of things to try and work it up. But, again, you're just playing right into Eberflus's hands by just completely neglecting him. And that's what's disappointing, because you've got the momentum before the half. Come out. Be brave. Take some shots. Screw the knife into them, because at this point, they look like they're done. They're shook. They can't deal with us. And then you just kind of go really tame and let them back in. That's the unforgivable part of this. Like, just be him brave and use the guy.
Yeah. In that third quarter, David Montgomery played one snap. Like, what's up with that?
Mm. And he was the better guy in terms of getting the hard yards in this one. Like, he ran angry when he was. And, yeah, I just... Don't get it.
Anyway, after that point, the Lions are 6 points down with 1:36 to go in the third quarter. So it very much is still in the Lions' hands to do something here. And they go Gibbs run for six, and then snap fumble, Chicago ball by TJ Edwards, which really was the dagger in the heart, I think, of this game. Bears do capitalize too, starting at R29. Fields under pressure from Hutch, shovel past the Mercedes Lewis. They know they're sticking it to you when they can get away with that. Fields with a lovely throw over the shoulder on the far side to Dalton to Forbin for 16. Fields then misses Komet for an open touchdown on the far side of the field as he goes into the fourth quarter. Moore with a wide receiver screen, but a really nice tackle for us by Kendall Vildor. Third down and goal from the 11, and Fields rollout run for a touchdown on the near sideline. 2-point attempt was no good. Throw to DJ Moore. Moore's wide open. But because Commission Anzalone get through their line, forcing Fields to roll out, and he can't actually find him. So good pressure actually ended up saving us two there. That's 25-13 for the Bears. Lions' ninth drive, throw behind the line to Gibbs, tackle for a loss by Edmonds. Those short passes just weren't getting it done, unfortunately. Third and 10 to Josh Reynolds at the sticks, caught it, but came back because momentum was taking him towards the ball. Fourth and one, tackle for a loss on Gibbs, turnover on downs. Bears, third and six, great pitch and catch to Moore versus Kendall Vildor. Play action pass to Moore. Then on third down and two in the red zone, missed Darnell Mooney, and you could see it on Fields' face that he wanted that one back. 28-yard field goal was good. So that was the end of the point scoring at 28-13. Lions put together a nice drive next. Lots of run plays for chunk yards, about 8 minutes to go. Running the ball a lot, but getting lots of yards, so it's okay. Pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Great pass breakup by Jaquan Brisker. I mean, just punches the ball out as soon as it gets there. I don't think Amon-Ra did anything wrong on that play. It's just good defense. Third down and 10. Check down to Monty to get the first. Second down and 5. False start on our seeker. It feels like they've all had one at least at this point. Goff then sacked by a combination of Dexter and Sweat. Goff with a great throw to Amon-Ra St. Brown, broken up by Brisker again and again. I think it's a great play by Brisker. I don't think Amon-Ra does anything wrong on that one. And then fourth down and 17, throw again to Amon-Ra St. Brown. And it's a bit short, and Amon-Ra kind of slips a tiny bit, but he gets there, but he drops it, unfortunately. So the Bears turn us over on downs. They miss a deep throw, big time. That field's way out there, could have been picked, should have potentially had someone in the area, but it just wasn't. Third down and 8, holding on right. Fields slides short of the lines again. It would have been fourth down and 2, but we accept the penalty. Makes it third down and 18. They end up running the ball for 6 yards to keep the clock rolling and end up punting it away. Lions with hope extinguishing fast, about 3.5, 4 minutes to go now. Goff deep left to Josh Reynolds. Amazing snag against Jaquan Brisker. I mean, if all the other throws I said that Goff did was good, that might have been the best one actually, but it's too late, to be honest. That was a 27 yards, but then Goff sacked by a combination of Sweat and Jones, and then sacked again by Jones, and then in desperation time, fourth and forever, interception by Terrell Edmonds, and then the Bears get 2 rushes for a first down, kneel downs, and that's ball game. Boys, we had opportunities in the end of that. It starts with the snap being fumbled, and for me, I think that's almost game. But even then, with 8 minutes to go, we put a drive together and shoot ourselves in the foot with stupid penalties and the offensive line just falling to shit. And it's just the most frustrating thing, because in those sort of situations, we have pulled ourselves out, but this was just one step too far.
It felt like that was probably, or maybe, the worst half of football we played all year. Because it's easy to look back on the Ravens game and obviously the score, but the Ravens were humming. Right, they were playing seriously good football and we couldn't stop them. The Bears were pretty much just existing during this half, and that's not a shot at them. I thought they played a nice game overall, but they weren't setting the world on fire for the third quarter or the fourth quarter, really. We just continued to shoot ourselves in the foot, and it was just really frustrating. Now, you're exactly right. There's been a number of times this year where we have actually managed to pull ourselves out of that in some way, shape, or form, and you just can't rely on that. I do wonder, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more at the end. So Jared Goff, I think, has the memory of an elephant in that he is a confidence player when it comes to individual throws within games. But I think now we've had enough weeks back-to-back where he has been hit, and I do think it's on his mind. And I think that comes all the way back to why isn't J-Mo getting more targets and all these other things. I just think he's starting to regress a little in terms of not just the outcome of throwing the picks and the fumbles, et cetera, which were all very visible, but just not making the same throws or not trusting himself to make the same throws. We still get those few throws a game, like you mentioned the DPJ one earlier, and there were some really nice throws in here. The one to Amon-Ra you mentioned, like hell of a play by Brisker, it was a great throw as well. But there's just a lot of nothing at the same time. And a lot of times where it feels like he's more nervous to pull the trigger on some of these throws. So I think that's probably the biggest thing on the offense, which is my biggest concern going into this point forward. because I'm not sure Goff can get his confidence back, even though we've got 4 weeks left or four games left or whatever. I think it takes more than just one great performance for him to get back into the flow we saw earlier in the season, where he was absolutely incredible. So I think my biggest takeaway from this half was like poor execution from players, poor play calling on both sides of the ball. Everything was bad. But my longer term concern, I think I'm worried about Goff getting his swag back by the time he gets to the playoffs.
If I'm completely honest, like Goff, yeah, is an issue. But for me, it's the 5 men in front of him. Like I say, they have shown now for what, best part of the month, they ain't protecting him. He has been pummeled in recent weeks. And I genuinely think, like I say, that is also, he's trying to second guess, will one of them get through? Like I say, he hasn't lost it, but I feel like right now he's second guessing his offensive line. As last few weeks, they've been terrible. Sacks, penalties, missed assignments, and all of them, none of the blame, like say, all six, seven of them played, they've all at some point been terrible. And some weeks, like say, they've collectively been bad. And this was a week where they were all pretty bad. And this team is predicated on its offensive line. Like I say, the offense, like I say, starts of it also ends of it. Like I say, it's really frustrating, like, to have on paper, like, this top three offensive line, and we know how good it can be. It just feels like we very rarely have seen the potential of it. And we've got to have Frank. Like I say, it feels like he's the linchpin that kind of holds it together. He's like, he's the marmalade in between, like, say, Paddington's two slices of bread. Like, it's important. Like I said, and I love Graham Glasgow. Like I said, he I've chatted to him on Twitter. Like I said, he is a great, he's probably the best free agent signing we made this year because he's been absolutely crucial. But like I said, he's better at guard at centre. Right now, we're having to make these shuffles. And it's playing, like I said, on Goff's mind. Goff is, like I said, there's players where he has been wide open and defenceless and pummeled, and it just feels like it's something lately we've not been able to overcome. And we did not threaten a comeback in this game whatsoever. Like I said, we stunned the Bears 3 weeks ago, and that will have stung them. Like I said, at no point at the end of that third, start of this fourth quarter, did they ever think they're going to do it again. They know we didn't. They know we couldn't. We just didn't. We didn't threaten it. We didn't look like we had it in us. I never was convinced of it. I never thought at any point, we'll come back. We did it again. So I was like, that fumble, game over. I considered turning over. Like, they're just going to go for the motions. And if Tom's right, the Bears just went through the motions for most of that second half. And in the end, they managed to pull away the subduers. And yeah, these things, they're going to take a couple of weeks to fix. It's potentially, I'd say, health-wise and getting the continuity of the line back together. Only got a few weeks left, so is it good or bad we're playing on a short week? Honestly, I think it's good. I think that we need to forget yesterday is gone and just get him straight back into it. Dan Campbell says this week he's going to be irritable, he's going to be a pain, he's going to be mad. I hope some guys need to get chewed out. No more Mr. Nice Guy this week. Like I say, so you got to lay into some of these dudes, and these backup, like I say, these guards need to know, and the backup tackles, they need to know. If you're going to step into this, like, top three O-line in the league, like, there's no weak link. You've got to play like one of them, like I say. And Goff has to know, like, he's got to be able to step up into those confidence, those throws. Like I say, Laporte throw at the start of the game, the middle of the DPJ, and then Josh Reynolds right at the end. Like I say, three fantastic throws, but a lot of nothingness, as Tom said, in between. A lot of shaky throws, a lot of throws that were at the feet, to the body, behind, kind of just off there, but catchable. We've seen those last few weeks. So, yeah, for me, like, the O-line, it's got to sort its shit out. Cut out the fucking penalties and get on board with each other and keep him upright. Because, like I said, we're turning the ball over, and this defense, it will bend so long. but it will break eventually. You cannot keep giving the ball away.
I am so using that in one of my scouting write-ups this year. He is the marmalade in Paddington Bear's sandwich on this offensive line, whilst he has the mentality of Scrooge because he gives away no presents, no pressures. I'm going to do something like that. You've inspired me there, Ryan. But, you know, the guys have kind of summed this up quite perfectly. We didn't come to the party and some of the play calls. If I ever see a 4th-and-1 again in our own half where we line up in the I formation, I am going to crowbar somebody. We have Jameson Williams, who can run faster than Superman. We have David Montgomery, who is like a bulldozer who you can't stop. And you're lining up all the way back in the eye for a 4th-and-1. And you know what? That is not forgivable. That is unforgivable. I can hate that call. I hate everything about it. You need 1 yard. So what are you going to do? You're going to send your running back another 8 or 9. So he needs 10. It's stupid. It was a stupid turnover. It got blown up before. I don't even think, what was he? He was about 5 yards short, 4 or 5 yards short. They just didn't block it well. Why? You've got the weapons to do something far more inventive and creative than that, and you line up in the eye. I hate it. This just game was called so poorly. And again, they know what we're going to do. Oh, yeah, you're lined up. You're giving away completely what you're doing. You're selling no threat that you're going to pass it. You're selling no threat that you're not using any motion. You are not using any creative. Oh, they're going to run it up the gut. Let's go blow this girl up. We'll send everybody in, which they did. Like, you could have chipped someone off the edge. You could have used JMO in motion. You could have got it. And that's 13 minutes left, and you're a score down at that point. Like, we had opportunities, and we made boneheaded decisions. And that was the story of this game. They didn't beat us. We beat ourselves. And that half was, it was a disgrace. Execution, play calling, everything about it sucked. And they deserve to win. And now we got a lot of questions to answer going forward. But yeah, there's some really unforgivable plays in that.
All right, let's. I think we've talked about the majority of the themes, but Ryan talked about the offensive line. Is it a long-term problem for the Lions for the rest of the season? Is it something you think they can fix? What do you guys make of it?
I've got no worries that they can sort the offensive line out. That's not in my top five problems. But I think the part that we do need to work on is there's two ways to keep your quarterback upright. There's a good O-line and there's finding him some targets so he's not holding the ball too long. And if we're not spreading the opponent's defence out and we're not stretching the field and Goff's taking the snap and looking up at his reads and just seeing traffic, then he's going to get sacked and no O-line's going to protect him. So, you know, we need to scheme our wide receivers better. We've got some great weapons. Let's use them.
I mean, Hank's bringing so many guys up and making them play well. Like, Keody's not played much this year at all. I think this is his first start. And, like, one false start aside, he's played a bit, but one false start aside, very clean game. Played really well, actually, compared to some of his veteran accomplices on the left-hand side of the line. So it was the vets who stunk up the joint in this one. Like, Glasgow with that stupid penalty. Taylor with every sack of the day struggled. But Jonah was all right. As long as the vets get the stuff together, line's going to be absolutely fine. Like, Hank's brought so many guys up and got them performing well. No worries there at all. Just your big guys let you down in this one.
And it's all relative. I think our line was so good earlier in the year. And again, the part of this comes back to Goff as well, sadly, which is it's been a bit of a tough watch the last 4 weeks, but you know what? It's pretty rare you get all five guys out every week of the season. We're going to deal with injuries. And kind of don't shout it too loud, but this is probably going to be the best offensive line we have for the next 5 years, 10 years. We're going to have to start paying people soon. It's unlikely we're going to hit on this many guys in the draft again, just being realistic. I think the concern is if this line isn't perfect and that's not realistic, then there's going to be issues with Goff under pressure. So it's like you need to be the first or second best line in the league, because if you regress to being the 6th or 8th or 10th best, that's going to cause problems. That's not very sustainable. So do I think that the offensive line is one of my main problems No, it's been a bit of a frustrating watch, I think, recently, but that's life. I think offensive line play is normally frustrating to watch because it's almost like the goalkeeper in soccer, right? It's you only notice them when they're letting in the goals. It's rare that you're actually just sat there watching line play and everything's perfect. And so when you give up sacks, it is frustrating, but it's the same for 31 other teams too. Unfortunately, when you're following the Lions, you don't see as many sacks the other way around as you'd like, so you maybe don't notice it as much. But other teams are panicking the whole time about their O-lines. I'm not hugely concerned. We can still run the ball. We can still win by running the ball, passing the ball. Like, it will be what it will be. So, yes, frustrating. I think Decker is a concern. I don't know how banged up he is or what. He obviously has taken a step back. I mean, watching him just get ball rushed into Goff's pocket by Ngakoue is not really what you want to be seeing. But I mean, there's good players in the league. Guys are going to get home eventually, and we've just got to learn to live with it and find other ways to win.
I think Steve might disagree with you there, Tom. Andre Onana is definitely chief clown of the circus for Man United. You notice him all the time.
I mean, I would say, using a Paddington metaphor, that the problem is with our O-line is when someone does get through, like Goff's there with his feet of marmalade. And that's the problem. Like, he's just not going to escape any pressure.
And yet, Goff has been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL when not turning pressures into sacks. So I don't agree with that at all. Goff has actually been fantastic with the one step sidestep and getting the ball out. So I think he's been fairly good.
Only if people are open, and people aren't getting open at the moment. And like I said, this is a temporary problem. Like, this was a wrinkle. And the offense... You know, I look at the four games ahead of us, and I think we will win at least one of those games with like an absolutely barnstorming offense where we blow the doors off someone. Like I said, my worries are all on the defensive side of the ball.
You should just slather him in axle grease. Like, can't hold on to him and sack him if you can't grab him.
You keep your fantasies to yourself.
Oh, Steve, I'll get you there one day, Steve.
And it's not as if there's not a ways of scheming around a bad offensive line. Like, we've seen it this year with the Dolphins, with the Bengals the past couple of years, with Joe Burrow and their bad offensive line, the Rams the past couple of years. If you don't have a good offensive line, what do? You make moving pockets. And we have seen Goff's not the most mobile guy in the world, of course, but you can maybe move the pocket, get him on the move, do some bootlegs and stuff where he's got away, you're moving him away from the pressure and scheming stuff up. Like, imagine a play-action boot where you've got him throwing to Laporta. Like, we see teams play against us every single bloody week. There seems to be one, like, play-action boot where they get a tight end coming out and they get an easy completion to them. There is ways for Ben to scheme this. He should know. He's been around a couple of different schemes, and there is ways for him to do it. But obviously, I think it's got a time for him to adjust that now. While he knows that Ragnall isn't going to be here this week, probably, do it now. And implement it, because we're going to need it if this offense... I know I have faith in us fixing offensive line, but you look at how good that Dallas pass rush is, even with Micah Parsons dealing with the flu and that, and he's getting... Even their backups are getting like 90-plus pass rush grades from PFF, which I know it's not everything, but when they've got such a good pass rush, we need it sorted by then, because it could be... You know, we've got Broncos this week. Their pass rush is not as good as it used to be. They've got a good one. Vikings have still got Danielle Hunter, who's good. We're going to need them to step up at this point. You know, Frank is a big part of it. Centers always are. But we've dealt with why we learned injuries before. Like, they were held. We had games last season where we were starting Dan Skipper at left guard and he was doing amazing. There was games where we were starting Logan Stenbuck and he got a 0.0 pass blocking grade and yet we still looked pretty good. So we've shown it before. Just don't know why it's not happening right now.
I mean, Micah Parsons straight up bull rushed three guys yesterday on his own and got a sack. Like, I think at this point you'd need a teleporting pocket to get away from him. I think that's just going to be what it was, though. I think he took a running back, a tight end, and a tackle with him and got a sack. It's just like, fuck's sake, he's so good.
I mean, there are several boots that Goff ran in this game, naked boots, where sweat's just in his face. Though, like, I feel like they were trying to do some of that stuff and they were just ready for it. Some of those boots that I see us bite on all the time, especially Hutch, where he's on that side and they're booting to his side of the field. Hutch is biting on the run action because he's so eager to get to the ball.
And they know we like doing that sort of thing. So I think it's just defenses being well drilled against us. And I don't really understand why we can't do the reverse. But anyway, we've covered the majority of the other game themes. So it just falls to us to highlight some people one way or the other in a segment we call Cigars and Subpars. So I realise we might be falling on one side of the aisle more than the other, but is there anyone wants to shout out one way or the other?
Give me more of Kindleville Dawn next week and give me less Jerry Jacobs. I'm not going after Jerry. I'm not going to be mean about him on social media, but Kindle did okay. Was it because he knows the Bears? Okay, maybe. But we'll find out this week if he plays well again. Maybe the guy needs a chance. But yeah, like I said, Jerry's lost all his confidence. And if you just throw him out there for 90 snaps a game, he isn't going to get it back. Like I say, so I think you need to wrap him in cotton wool. From people on social media, like I say, because he's taking some fucking heat, like I say, and also on the field, just put him a bit of bubble wrap. Like I say, just give Kindle some of the snaps. And like I say, just protect him, like I say right now. Don't hang the kid out there dry. And if you're going to put him out there, like I say, even though I don't trust Kirby as far as I can throw him, giving him protection over the top, at least put him there. At least give him a security blanket so he knows that, okay, if I screw up, at least that guy over there behind me, he's got my back. Because right now, Jerry don't feel like he's got his back. So yeah, give Vildor played okay yesterday. Some good tackles for loss. Some good tackles, like say he was physical for a smaller guy. Yeah, he gets a cigar because he came straight into the team. He was just thrown in.
I want to get this in here early because I know that Anthony Hicks special teamers is coming, but JRM does deserve his yeah, well, when they play well in the first team and make impactful plays in the first team, you get my vote there. But his sack was incredibly well timed. Waited for the gap to open up, blitzed perfectly, took Fields' ass down, loved that. The pass breakup was really good as well. You know, he broke up. That was going to the end zone, that thing was. So he made some big impact plays. Built on last week where he had a lot of good special teams plays, did his work there. He's got some snaps with the first team. He's looking very good. So he does need, you know, keep sending his snap count up. If he keeps playing like that, keep sending his snap count up. That's all I ask with him. If he performs in the first team, great, and he's done a really good job recently.
But for me, it's Jack Campbell. She's now strung three good weeks together. I know it's not as explosive as maybe people would want. It's not for the highlight plays, but I mean, against Baltimore, he played 27 snaps where he was on the line of scrimmage. And since then, he hasn't played more than four. And he's had a PFF grades of 65.1, 62.8, 44 against the Bears, 74.4, 74.4, 65.2. So five out of those 6 weeks, he's playing above average on a defense that frankly isn't. And given how he really struggled early in the season, how they were doing all kinds of things with him that just wasn't working in terms of lining him up on the edge, I think it's good to see him have this slightly more consistent run of form.
Going to go for an offensive guy because I know obviously defense men stood up. Donovan Peoples-Jones. Not very heralded at the trade deadline. Everyone was a bit like, oh, we're looking defensive. Like even me, I was like, wish it was like a pass rusher or a corner. But this game, when he finally got targeted, he made the plays. And when he was run blocking, he was looking pretty damn good. Like, I know obviously not many people can really hand up their hands on the offense and say, yeah, I did a really good job for him. Playing seven snaps and making a bit of a visible impact on those limited snaps. He's earned a few more looks along, like JMO and Khalif. So I'm all there for DPJ this week.
Steve? I thought Laporta played well again, and I thought Brock Wright played well. Brock Wright's lost out on snaps in recent weeks, but he comes in and he always looks competent. And I thought the two of them played pretty well. But, you know, it's just a shame they didn't get more of the ball.
When can we start using the popularization Legota? Like, he's going to get there eventually. He's going to be the GOAT, so.
All right. I've
got to change his name.
I'm just going to take my guy before Ash takes my guy. Ifeatu Melifonwu is low-key having a breakout year, and no one's going to talk about it. He has been fantastic, and he came in to replace Tracy Walker. He didn't put a foot wrong all game. just I thought he was terrific, especially in a game where the tackling was poor. I thought he didn't put a foot wrong. He was good in coverage, good in run defense coming downhill. He needs to be getting start reps. So the games that he has started, which were or played significant reps, Atlanta, 76th grade. At Green Bay, 68th grade. Chicago, just gone, 67th grade. In a DB room that looks all at sea. And again, with the Jack Campbell comment, it's another guy in a below-average defense playing above average. We're missing people like that. And his physical makeup is something we don't have in that DB room. Big, tall, physical, speedy. Get him reps.
Can I give a half cigar as well? I want to give a half cigar to Kamish, because Kamish had a really good game yesterday. That is the Kamish we know and love. But he only gets a half cigar because he's waited till week 13, 14, for the first time we've seen last year's Kamish. And we've really missed that Kamish. So really good game, gets you half a cigar, but you know, you've got to start stacking them together now because Aiden needs help. And we got a lot of sacks yesterday. Why? Because we're getting pressure from another edge rusher. You know, it's mind-blowing, these things. But when two guys work together well, it's like, well, you're going to overwhelm some guys. You're going to get some sacks, open up some gaps. So, yeah, half a cigar, Kamish. You get full one next week if you do it again.
Well, speaking of an edge rusher who stepped up, why don't we talk about the guy who I know he only played 8 snaps on defense. He was our 5th best defender. And
I thought Matt was going to say this.
Exactly. That's what he saw my face when he didn't say him earlier. I was like, yes, I'm stealing it quickly. I'm giving him a taste of the medicine I've had ever since we started doing this. Romeo Okwara really has stepped up the past couple of weeks. Like, I know, obviously, earlier this season, we're hearing he hasn't been fully up to shape because he's coming off the ACL. He's a bigger guy. He's shown a bit of what we've been missing from him the past couple of years. We got injured. Like, I know Matt, I think it was last week, said he's grading out better than he did in his 10.5 sack season. But for him to not only show out a bit on pass, like on defense, with only 3 pass rusher snaps, getting 1 pressure, doing a bit in the run defense grade as well, kind of being okay, like sort of like an edge 4, he's doing great. Then to show out on special teams as well, to get a not like an elite 90 grade in that, at least I think it's over 12 points higher than the second best person. He's maybe making an argument to stick around on a 1-year cheap deal as a sort of veteran presence in the edge room who can be there on the sort of some of the special teams like block units and stuff. I'm there for it.
His grades so far in Detroit year to year from 2018, 64, 60, 69, 73, 56 last year, 78 this year. It's low-key because he's not getting many reps, but he's producing when he's on the field. It's the same argument for Melifonwu, but Melifonwu got reps yesterday. So just put the guys who are producing on the field. I don't think that's a hard thing to ask for, but, you know.
And it's a shame that his brother can only produce against teams that have a Bears logo on him as well. Because yeah. His brother wasn't actually that bad, but he's still rubbish overall. So,
right, well, and any subpars anyone wants to shout out?
Harris for not even being able to make the team.
Jake McLeod.
Not Will. Charles.
Oh.
Okay, fine. I know we take a lot of shots at the guy, but that first.
All right, guys. I know I'm back. Hey. Out of this entire panel this year, I've been probably one of the easiest on Will because I've deliberately not mentioned his name. So if you've even like said one, I know I did the other week. But that was like the first negative thing I've said about him in a very long time. Charles was inactivated and not even on this team. You should be able to get on this team when you can't get sacks. Sorry, I will predicate it with. I'll just call him Charles next time, shall I?
Yes.
God, Harris. the looks on all your faces. Then I'm pretty sure the other one only got 1 snap again, and he didn't give away a penalty, so he's getting better.
Yeah. He was our 9th best defender.
Yeah, he had 1 snap the other week and gave away a penalty. He had 1 snap this week, didn't give away a penalty. Well done, Will Harris. Cigar for you. You're getting better.
Oh, God. Anyone else?
I'm hurt, guys. I'm very hurt by that.
Bugs. Like I say, we've heard all these negative things about him. Like I say, gets his chance. Very forgettable. Didn't do anything. Like I say, I can't even warrant having him active again. Just give Broderick Mahan a go, Quinn and Bahana, like you say. Just, I know he's going to be gone in the offseason, but honestly, get rid of him now. Like I say, I'm out on him. Like I say, I'm out on his personality. I'm out on his supposed work ethic. And like I say, tweets a lot, but gets a chance finally after everyone's like, oh, where's Bugs? We're so much better with Bugs. Well, we're not, are we? Because he was shit.
He's Nick Williams 2.0.
Yeah, he tweets a lot. He talks a lot. Don't back it up. So, what's up, Doc? Bye-bye, Tommy.
I don't think he deserves to be put in the bucket with Nick Williams. Because he
might... said 2.0. I didn't say he was Nick Williams, but the he's next going evolution... down that route.
All right, he's not a dickhead, though. He's just a bit of a diva. Nick Williams actively went after fans calling him out. Like, it's
amazing how much diva and dickhead coincide with one another. So, like, it's like the Pokemon evolution. He's evolved one step towards good, but he's still at minus nine.
Anyone else deserving a call-out?
Fox. Who are you saying?
Fox, for his tackle. Alone.
Guy oh, no, no. Oh.
Wait, we're doing subpars, right?
Subpars. Oh, right. Sorry.
We're doing subpars.
I think there was a couple of obvious ones, which we've kind of touched on throughout the thing. A couple maybe slightly less obvious ones. Josh Pascal, it's been a disappointing year in general, but this is the kind of game where I'm expecting his skill set to translate. He's not going to be a guy who gets 15 sacks a season, but what he is going to be a guy is a guy that can set the edge, keep contain. And against a guy like Fields, I'd expect to see a bit more out of it. And he just really hasn't offered much. He's been really inconsistent snap to snap. So he's frustrating. And then maybe a bigger picture one who I'm sure you've talked plenty about, but I know I haven't been on a while. Jay Kerb. It has been a rough season, and that only continued obviously yesterday. I think the play we mentioned for the touchdown on 4th and 13, it's a horrible play call for starters. What worries me most, I think, is, and it's really hard to know without being behind the scenes, if this is coaching, if this is leadership. That being said, someone's got to see that and try and check out. And I'm trusting one of my safeties. And to be honest, the senior safety in Jacob versus Iffy, who I know is older, but has obviously played less football and has not been a regular starter. By the time that ball is snapped, he is over towards the numbers on the trip side. And from what everything you see, it looks like cover one. He bolts as soon as the ball is snapped to try and get over the top, but he's nowhere near it. So either we need to check out that call, but if you know you need to get to the middle of the field, he needs to make that move earlier. There's just a whole variety of different situations with him where you're just not maybe seeing, I don't know if it's maturity, I don't know if it's smarts or whatever. It's just... I think that's where the conversations we've had today about CJ come back in, is someone who is going to be that marshal on the back end, because it doesn't feel like that's going to be Kirby's role now in his career, and you're not really seeing the signs he's going to take it forward. So disappointed, and that's only because I was so excited after last year. He played so much better last year than I really expected as a rookie, and I think there's so much talent in there that it's just frustrating to see these kind of weeks get stacked.
Well, that's good for my guys. You've gone for, I was going to say, with Pascal, he has been looking better the past 3-4 weeks. This was a regression game for him for certain.
Yeah.
Missing one of his two tackles, but he has been looking really good the past couple of weeks, moving him inside a bit more when we needed him to. Be a great regression game for him, just because obviously he missed his one, two tackles, didn't really flash up. With Kirby, yeah, I think it is more of a scheme thing. So last year, obviously being the number one Kirby Joseph fan guy, as we all know, played him a lot in the single high where he's good, trying to give him a bit more on his plate this year by putting him in split safety, making him do more run defense, as I discussed in the YouTube chat earlier, putting him on blitzes at stupid moments like the opening play against Green Bay, and then having to take, as you say, to step up and take that leadership role when he's never really had to do it. Even at Illinois, he wasn't really looked at as that kind of guy. Like, he only played really one full season for them. The rest of the time, he was a special teamer. So for him to sort of have to step up and do that for Iffy, because obviously, as we all know before the game, he was Tracy was benched for Iffy. He just doesn't have any skill set because he's never done it, and he's not fully cognizant of this scheme like CJGJ is, like Cam Sutter's supposed to be, like a Jerry's supposed to be. They're supposed to be the veteran guys yet.
it is falling on him a bit to sort of check out that back end, and it's just too much for him when he's still trying to get fully up to speed with the NFL game.
So actually, in a very quick build on that then, another subpar, Dre Bly, because you can watch that game, and you mentioned earlier the soft coverage on, I can't actually remember, was it Tyler Scott who had the completion? I can't remember, but the soft coverage. We've got a nickel blitz there. If he is coming down to obviously cover that nickel, to cover that slot receiver, for me, it's got to be coaching, right? Because he's either at too much depth, or you'll see he'll take a read step and then stop. So it could be a really like poor play from him, and it might be that he hasn't had enough reps, but like these are things I'm expecting the coaches to be on top of. So whether it's giving the guys the confidence to check out of things, whether it's their rules, that there's so many things. I mean, even the fact, Jerry, if you're playing cover one, you can't let DJ Moore get an inside release, right? I mean, it's basic kind of coaching stuff that we seem to see on a week in, week out basis. And again, I know my AG thing's a bit of a bit, especially on Discord a lot of the time, but we do give AG a lot of shit. I haven't heard anyone mention Dre Bly, right? And this defensive backfield has really kind of regressed. So
yeah, I don't want to dig into Dre Bly, but and Ant and Roy can probably back me up here because they have seen a college game as well. More away better than I do. It was shit at UNC. He had a load of talent and it was fucking dog shit. Like, it was a good hire in terms of personality, and obviously fans used to play here. Obviously, I've got his jersey in my wardrobe and everything. But yeah, it just hasn't worked out this year. And it's kind of the same with Duker, who's obviously our safeties coach. He had to step up last year when we fired Pleasant. He took over the whole secondary. Things improved, but now suddenly all the safeties have just regressed, and it's confusing to see.
So the guy that's responsible for all the defensive coaches is Aaron Glenn. So just a simple question. If the season was to end today, where would you be on Aaron Glenn coming back next year? In or out?
Out.
Yeah. And that's where, like I say, the AG bit, which I keep running offline, is not defending, not saying that he's the savior of this team and not even saying he's doing a particularly good job. It's more how quickly we are to just jump on him for things which actually aren't his fault, because you can quite easily pick lots of things that are. And unfortunately, I said this on Dan Passapod previously, I think he might be a better head coach than a defensive coordinator. And I really like him in terms of how he speaks. And naturally, I'm drawn to that style of coach. So there is some bias. But frankly, the results haven't been good enough. And it's as simple as that. Now, do I think we should be firing guys mid-season, given where we are in our journey? Absolutely not. And that's what triggers me more, is the kind of ridiculous overreactions. Even if you want him fired in season, which I can understand, it's things which are quite clearly nothing to do with him, and yet he still gets blame. But I really don't see a way you can bring him back unless you see some sign of life, or not even some sign of life, some real positive step forward in the next 4 to 6 weeks. I'm not sure you can bring him back, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, you know, they say it's overall the job that's been done there. I mean, look at the positional coaches. Bly's been bad, but Kelvin's been really good. Like, the linebackers have really come on, you know, great in most facets. So, like, he's doing a good job. You know, John Scott, he's doing, you know what? He's doing a good job, because our run defense has been immaculate this year for the most part. Like, it's one of the better ones in the league, which we've struggled with for years. He's made that better. Obviously, the pass rushing is a concern, but I think the position coaches are doing more good than bad. So then it sort of goes to the higher-ups as to why overall it's doing so bad. But you've got to wait till the end of the year. Like, this was always, give him year three. If you can't be mid-tier in the NFL by year three, then you've got problems, really. And if he's not there, then that's fair enough.
I don't know, not in season. I don't know where we're going to rank after this game, but last year, per DVOA, we were 10th, weren't we, in the NFL, in total defense? Not total defense, in overall defensive DVOA, we were 10th or 11th. I know that seems fucking insane, but it masks basically what was a top five unit for the first 5 weeks and then a bottom 25 or worse defense since then. But that's what we're talking about, is the shift from one to the other.
Trying to take a guess, because the DVOA website I use is updated for this week.
I would guess 12th.
Hang on.
Also, just to say as well, can't fire him because we also need. I do want those two third-round picks through the minority head coaching program. He is going to get if someone likes it. If we fire him, we don't get them. So you just have to leave him, and if he doesn't get a head coaching job, then you fire him.
Because yeah.
Wow. Well, on that horrible note, I think we've had a few questions, but I'm going to take them off the air because we've been going a while. Unless anyone has a little final comment they want to throw in. No. All right. Let's close this out now. College podcast coming this Wednesday. Bowl predictions. You want to check them out. And it's the time to get on the college show if you haven't before for the rest of the season, because the draft's 4.5 months away. It's in Detroit. You want to know who we want to be picking, and we want to know how much shit we can throw at the rest of the NFC North for their terrible picks. So get involved with the boys on Wednesday evening. Denver preview show, I think, is going to be Thursday with the game being on Saturday night. Ash, are you free on Saturday night?
Yep.
All right. We will be on the call then in that case, having a good time with the Denver game. Lions return home, needing to bounce back. Join us for that. And please add us on our socials. We're all the Lions UK, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group for worldwide fans on Facebook is Detroit Lions Fans UK 1 Private Wide. The website with Ash's preview articles on rotluk.com. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars and rate and review and all that good stuff. Boys, it's been a pleasure to have so many of you on here, and how many lovely comments we've had in the live chat for all of your opinions and just letting each other speak as well, which is awesome. I think we run a tight ship here, so it's great stuff. To everyone in the live chats, you listening on the audio podcast, appreciate you all very much. I look forward to speaking with you later in the week, but for now, we're still 9-4, guys. Keep your chins up. Let's go, Lions 1 Pride.
1 Pride.